When I did my undergraduate work at Manchester College, now Manchester University, I took a class entitled First Century Christianity. Now, in that class, I remember seeing a movie is based on the Gospel of Mark. Jesus was portrayed as a very serious character. He never had a smile on his face. He seemed to be rather brooding and foreboding. His walk was more like a march when he went from village to village. And while I was watching that movie, I said to myself, why in the world would anybody follow that man? Unless they feared for their lives. It just seemed like the more he was on the screen, the angrier he got. Now, if Jesus had a wide range of emotions like we think that he did, then I'm sure that he smiled much of the time. He listened to and told jokes to his disciples and to those who were following, and probably laughed frequently. In reading a book by J. Ellsworth Callis, I happened upon a chapter entitled A Laugh and a Prayer. This morning, we will share with you his perception of how prayer and laughter really can be intertwined.
So during the first third of the 20th century, there was a favorite American Bible teacher, and his name was Roland Walker. Now, I don't know if that rings a bell with you or not, but he used to be well known for his classes that he taught at Ohio Wesleyan University. But he was not only just a good Bible teacher. What the students remembered most about him when it came time to his eulogy was the prayers that he led during the school's chapel services. There were times, the student said, that he would literally pause in the middle of a prayer and laugh at something he found amusing and that no doubt he felt God would find amusing as well. And many of his colleagues, as well as the college students, found his attitude in prayer to be very refreshing. They didn't find it to be unholy at all. And the question then becomes, why shouldn't we? Why shouldn't we share something funny with God? Now, if there's one thing I know about you Lincolnshire family, is you love to laugh and you love to share funny stories. And that's what drew us to you. With all the serious prayers that we take to God, you know, all of our intercessory prayers, all our repentance prayers, and those we know are imperative, we know that. But don't you think sometimes God needs to laugh at times too? And don't you think he appreciates when we are able to bring something funny to him, like a friend? There is a mood, and we do see this reflected in Psalm 126. When you read that, you will read that it states in verse 2, then our mouth was filled with laughter and our tongues with shouts of joy. Now, the writing of that particular verse came after Israel had returned from captivity. And don't you think that's how we feel when we feel that we have been released from captivity of any sort, maybe a problem that's been pressing on us? When that's been resolved and we know God's had a hand in that, do we also not say our mouth was filled with laughter and our tongues with shouts of joy? But this isn't just the only time when it is appropriate in prayer to spend time laughing. You know, sometimes when I'm praying, I have to admit, I do some really stupid things, all right? So I'm laughing at my own absurdity, and I'm sure God understands and he gets it. So prayer is a particularly good time to be relieved from a burden of taking sometimes ourselves too seriously. One ought to chuckle. We should laugh at ourselves if we don't just outright laugh aloud. Teresa of Avila, who is a saint of the Catholic Church, encouraged her nuns, and I found this fact to be interesting because I don't know any nuns like this. I do know a lot of delicious, delightful nuns who love to eat when I went to St. Francis of University, who were exceptionally bright, and they loved to laugh. But this particular nun had her nuns dancing in the cloister as an expression of their joy and play castanets on feast day celebrations. My nuns at St. Francis never had us do that, but maybe I didn't know the whole story either. In addition, this particular saint was inclined to carry on with very frank and amusing prayers. And those who followed her, those who knew her, knew that to be true. And here's one example that's recorded. At one point, she was unhappy with the style and the manner of Mother Superior of the abbey in which she was residing. Now, that would have been her boss, right? Not the boss under God, right? And have any of you ever been just a little unhappy with maybe a boss you've been under, etc.? So she went complaining to God. She goes, you know, Lord, if I had my way, that woman would not be Mother Superior of this abbey. Now, Teresa, she reports that God replied to her and said, Teresa, if I had my way, she wouldn't be Mother Superior either.
The first of our two parables this morning that we're reflecting on is reported to us in both Matthew and Luke. Suppose you have a friend, Jesus said, and you go to him at midnight because you have a predicament. An unexpected guest comes, and you need to provide a hospitable snack, but you have nothing to eat. Your neighbor has what you need next door, but he also has a sleeping family. And getting provisions for you will mean awakening the family so that the neighbor tries to send you on your way. Basically, get away, get out of here. It's important at this point to interrupt Jesus's parable long enough to explain some differences from the first century to our 21st century. For one, they had no Walmarts. They had no Meijer. They had no 7-Eleven. Also, in that simple world, all the families slept on mats on the floor, side by side. For the mother or father to arise meant the likelihood of the whole family would be awakening, with the ensuing likelihood that the small children might cry for an extended period of time, and perhaps one spouse would berate you as being inconsiderate for having such middle-of-the-night neighbors. Now, the neighbor in Jesus' parable is not a bad sort. He'd like to help out, but not at the price of disturbing his family. So in an instance, vigorous whisper, he tells his friend to go somewhere else with his problem. Now Jesus made his point. And even though the man will not get up with his neighbor in the beginning, finally, when the neighbor is so persistent, his friend so persistent, he does get up and he does get whatever he needs. And we find that in Luke 11, verse 8. At this time, we are going to have a skit that portrays this parable in modern day. For this skit, think of Lucy Ricardo and Fred Mertz from the old TV series, I Love Lucy. Lucy is sitting in a rocking chair, rocking baby Ricky to sleep, and all of a sudden,
Lucy, oh Lucy, I have an emergency.
Fred, what's your emergency?
Ethel's out of town. She's at a business seminar. My in-laws came early, and I don't have any food. And after a long drive, they're hungry. Ethel wanted me to pick up some groceries yesterday, but keeping true to form, they weren't supposed to arrive until tomorrow, so I procrastinated. Lucy, I'm in a real pinch.
Go away, Fred. We're trying to sleep. I just got little Ricky asleep, and I have a big audition at the Copacabana tomorrow.
But Lucy, I really need your help. Don't you have something you can give me? Please, please, please.
Okay, okay. I have leftovers from supper I can give you. Just go in the kitchen and take what you need. But be quiet and leave me alone.
Thank you, Lucy. You're a real lifesaver.
Hopefully this skit, as well as Jesus' parable, put a little smile on your face. Just when we think we are settled in for the night, something or someone disturbs our quiet time. It's just like when you're just lying in bed and all at once you hear your cell phone going off. Well, even though we don't want to respond, in the end, we do. We keep in mind, what would Jesus do? Later on, as we think about the situation, a smile appears on our face, and maybe even a chuckle.
Now, there is another parable, and it appears only in Luke's gospel. And it's funny, but in a different way. We have two characters, much like what you just saw. And one is the judge. And if you were here for pre-worship, you see how well that ties in with this morning's lesson. There was a judge in a certain city, as the parable goes. And Jesus stated that this judge neither feared God nor had respect for people, as seen in Luke 18, verse 2. Now, you have a sense here of the judge that he was very unfeeling sort of person, but not only that, that he carried a bit of a mean streak. But also in the city, the other character was a widow, and she had suffered a serious injustice, and there was little hope for her to get her rights. And as we know, in the first century, widows didn't have much clout and didn't have much hope of receiving the help they needed. She couldn't afford an attorney, and there was no legal aid society to hear her appeal. Her only chance was this judge. So now we have a second skit featuring a judge and a widow who has been convicted unfairly.
Who's there?
You know, I'm the one who's been at your office door, at your favorite pub, at your home. Beautiful, by the way. I've even been jogging right beside you.
Oh, it's you. Go away. You're bothering me.
Not until you sign my acquittal papers that takes this criminal offense off my records. You know that my conviction was unfair.
Okay. Here, I'll sign your paper. Just stay away from me.
Thank you, Judge. Thank you. Mwah, mwah, mwah. Toodles.
Now, that pesky lady was everywhere the judge was. He could not get away from her. However, the judge hated to admit that he was beaten. So what does he do? He does what many of us do. He justifies his own actions. He tries to explain to himself why he was about to do what he was going to do.
And so the judge says, "Though I have no fear of God and no respect for anyone, yet because this widow keeps bothering me, I'll grant her justice so that she may not wear me out continuously."
That was verses 4 and 5 of Luke 18. The judge simply could not endure her any longer. The squeaky wheel finally got the grease. Now, it is a funny story, but it is based on a very serious problem. And you don't need much imagination to picture this rather pompous judge trying to sneak around corners in order to avoid the powerless woman, who's dressed obviously in widow's garbs and who seems to be staking him out like a private detective, and he would simply use the word, "She was stalking me." When she wins, however, you not only want to cheer for her, you also chuckle, don't you?
In both parables, Jesus answers serious questions with funny stories. Two of them, in fact. The one is a silly little predicament. The man with the midnight visitors will be embarrassed if he doesn't have food for his visitor, but he'll survive. A failure of hospitality is a significantly serious matter in the code of the Middle East, but you know, it's not really quite a life or death issue. The widow's story, on the other hand, is deadly serious. If she doesn't get justice, it's quite likely that her life will soon be reduced to begging in the streets. But in both cases, Jesus tells these stories with a twinkle in his eyes. I tell you the truth, some matters are too serious to be dealt with too seriously. The Jewish people who have suffered centuries of prejudice, persecution, and even death have become famous for their sense of humor. Consider the following list of American Jewish comedians: Jack Benny, Joan Rivers, George Burns, Goldie Hawn, Woody Allen, Mel Brooks, and Jerry Lewis. And there are others too. Just consider the propensity of some people to become so depressed with their continual struggles in life that they simply give up with life and die. Whereas comedy celebrates one's ability to endure and to survive. Callis says that in his years as a pastor, he often saw this quality in people who were undergoing great pain or loss. They insisted on laughing with him or finding humor in their difficult state instead of being chronically depressed. So is Jesus simply teaching us that we have to be like the British and have a stiff upper lip? Not at all. He's telling us that if we live in a world where good doesn't necessarily win out every day, yet in the long run that we know that God does win out. And because we know this is so, we can smile even when confronted by the apparently inexplicable.
For this we can be certain that God is on our side, isn't he? Amen. And as you heard during the children's story, there are three answers to prayer. There's yes, no, and slow. So sometimes the answer may be a no, because on our end, we may simply be short-sighted, or if we get what we want, it could actually be destructive. How many of you have ever looked back on a prayer that you fervently asked from God? He said no, and then you went, whew. Yes, in the long run, you realize that would have been the wrong path. That would have been the wrong choice. It's a good thing he didn't lead me there. In other instances, the yes, no, slow, the slow can also be the wait, just wait. And that's because sometimes we want things instantly and our minds are rather time bound. And sometimes we're a little bit impatient. And sometimes we simply don't know what's all at stake and so God may have more to reveal to us before he answers that particular prayer. So there is a time and a tide in the affairs of this life. What goes out oftentimes returns back in. What goes out oftentimes comes back in. And it's the timing of that tide that life, it goes up, it goes down. It goes up, it goes down. What we ask for may be right, but God may say the timing isn't just right yet. What is it, the double Dutch jump rope? You got to have the timing right before you jump in, right? And sometimes you wait a while before that jump rope is in right place before you can jump in. So God's just saying, hey, just wait a little bit. Then there are those times when in our struggle for good, whether by prayer or by deed or by both, we simply come up against very strong, great opposition. And I was hearing that in a class downstairs. And we're never surprised by that, are we? I mean, it's never pleasant, but sometimes when you're working for good, you will find evil in front of you. We have to recognize that great evil exists in our worlds and that there's many factors at work that could work against us. So we need to, like the neighbor in the parable, we need to keep knocking at the door. Or, like the widow in the parable, who keeps pestering this judge. Sometimes we need to do that with God with holy persistence. And there's a difference between being angry with God and demanding and saying, I need this, you know I need this, why aren't you granting this? There's a difference between that and saying, God, you haven't answered this prayer yet, and I just need to know when and if you can show me when the correct timing is. But this is what I feel is needed, and God, if you will just hear me, hear my plea. There is a difference between holy and unholy dialogue with God. We know that God is on the right side of an argument, of a situation, the right side. What our right, though, is depends much on who we are and the situation. So we have to be mindful that God is in and around and that God can use anything. Our perception of what is right is very limited. But as long as we tend to align ourselves to God's will, God will honor that. He will honor our persistence in asking him. He will honor our wanting to know. He will honor our wanting to be aligned to his will. So we may just need to wait.
And you know, sometimes the way God answers our prayer is totally different from what we would have imagined. For example, when we first retired from teaching in Indiana, we were talking about, you know, let's have God send us to a nice warm spot. You know, we've always been up here in Indiana, it's kind of cold. Maybe he could send us south or west, you know, somewhere it's warmer. So he sends us to Alaska. You know, sometimes you really have some interesting things when God is working with you. And you know, we often hear of the statement, persistence pays off. It did pay off for the neighbor who bothered his friend for food at midnight. It did pay off for the widow who kept asking the judge for justice in her case. When we have an issue in our life, let us not just give up and moan, woe is me. Don't sound like Eeyore. Instead, like the hymn we sang earlier, what a friend we have in Jesus. Let us take our burden to God in prayer. And as the